and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty, joined by my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about gauge wheels and closing wheels as planting season gets started around the country or is well underway in some areas. There are just a few things that we want to be watching out for. Obviously, we're always paying attention to how that seed is going in the ground, but a couple of things in terms of getting the seeding depth right and getting that seed to soil contact are having the gauge wheels set right, the closing wheels and so forth. And hey, stuff happens as you're driving through fields. You hit rocks, you hit sticks, you just have different things. You got to keep checking on things as you go along. All right, Brian, we also got a lot of Ag PhD mailbag questions that have come in. You want to start talking about planters or something else, or dive into the mailbag?
Well, I guess the whole planter thing, the number one thing that I know for a lot of people is, how wet is your soil? If your soil isn't dry, it's early. It's the 18th of April. It's not the 18th of May. So don't be in too big a rush. If it's a little touch and go, just let it sit for an extra half a day or a day or something like that. Because, I mean, yeah, when you start talking about opening, closing, anything that you're doing with that furrow, if it's too wet, you got major problems. And there's no fix to that. You can't go back like, oh, if I got a weed issue and my pre-emerge herbicide didn't work, I just go spray a post. Well, there's no such thing for fixing your seed trench or closing your furrow later or anything like that. So that's really the main point that I've got. There's a lot of variance with all these different things you can put on the planter, but ultimately I don't care what it is you put on the planter, you can't mud stuff in and expect great results with anybody's attachments or anything else.
Yeah, a lot of things to think about there. And you know, you think about that seeding depth too, as tillage practices have changed, as cover crop use has gotten more widely adopted. There's just a lot of things to think about as you're running through with the planter, how you're opening up that furrow, how you're keeping residue out of the way. And I know there's wide gauge wheels, there's narrow gauge wheels, and they each have a place. But like you were saying, Brian, if the soil conditions aren't perfect, then a lot of those little details make even more of a difference than they do when soil conditions are perfect.
Yeah.
All right. We've had a few questions come in. Let's just jump right into some questions here in the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag.
All right. And Aaron just sent this one in this afternoon. He said, does residual herbicide for corn need to be applied at a different rate, perhaps a higher rate, if it's applied pre-plant incorporated versus if it was applied post-plant right on the soil surface?
No. Wait, did he say you need a different rate or a higher rate if you're putting it on and incorporating it?
Correct.
Yeah, and I'd say it's the opposite. So in order to get the best results with the pre's, we really like them lightly tilled in. So we've never talked about this in the show, not one time, and we've been doing Ag PhD TV for 26 years now. But, I mean, honestly, you could probably expect 10% better performance when you incorporate it lightly. We do it with a field cultivator. So to make up for that, there's no set thing, because what you have to have is rain. So just because I increase the rate by 10% when I spray post-plant, that doesn't fix the problem of, oh, I don't get rain fast enough. So that's the reason why we don't talk about that specifically. But no, you're going to have better results when you lightly incorporate any pre-emerge herbicide there is compared to when you spray it post-plant.
All right. Speaking about
If I wasn't clear there, the reason why is because now you've got it down in the ground where the weeds are at. You don't need as much rainfall to get it activated.
Okay. Speaking of planting, this question came in from Rick, and he said you guys were talking about the planting depth needed for corn. Looked like you were somewhere around 2 1/8 inch. I'm just curious, what about sweet corn? Do you plant that at the same depth as you plant field corn?
Yes. You just don't want to go very deep, and you never, I mean, let's put it this way. every once in a while we'll say, oh, we'll plant a little deeper and get down to moisture. Or even with field corn, we say 2.5 inches. Yeah, that's in our range, whatever. Keep in mind, with sweet corn, it's weak. It's not very good. So you can't expect that it's going to do well in cold soils. You can't expect it's going to bust through a crust. It doesn't have a lot of tolerance for anything. It just doesn't have much vigor in most cases. So be real careful with how you are planting it, what you are planting into. Make sure your soil is warm. I'd rather sacrifice what would turn out to be yield that we talk about. Yield and just make sure I'm planting into warmer conditions. Also, the other big thing with sweet corn is you're planting fewer of them. So I was just talking about crusting there real quick. Well, one of the ways you get around crusting is you have a whole bunch of seeds planted close together. A lot of times when we plant sweet corn, we're going to plant it at half the population of our field corn. That way the ears get bigger. Okay, well, when you do that, now the plants are spaced further apart, and they're going to have even more struggle pushing themselves out of the ground because they are by themselves.
Yep, lots to think about there. Survivability is a big deal. You want that sweet corn crop to thrive, and you don't want it to suffer, that's for sure. All right, I get this one from John down in Oklahoma. Looking at your fertility removal app, I'm raising peanuts, and I'm working on my fertility program. I'm not taking any of the Stover off. So do I just figure amounts for the nuts, or do I consider the Stover as well?
No, whatever crop it is, so usually we're talking corn and soybeans and grain, but there's always the grain removal, there's the Stover, and the whole thing is it's what it takes to produce the Stover. That's not necessarily what's left in the Stover, but yeah, if you're leaving all the Stover out there, just figure that grain removal. And as long as you replace that, you should be staying even with your fertility.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, John. We're going to be talking about planters today, specifically gauge wheels and closing wheels. But if you have any questions, give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Tame tough weeds with a pre-plant application of Revitan, a powerful burn-down herbicide. Revitan drops the hammer on more than 50 species of tough weeds with great tank mix compatibility and low use rates. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Revitan. Always read and follow label directions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at poweroverweeds.com.
When it comes to fungal diseases like soybean white mold and SDS, you know how devastating yield loss can be. That's why you work with your seed dealer to find the best genetics for your farm. Did you know you can bring forward the defensive traits of those genetics with a seed treatment? Heads up, a biological plant activator primes your seed to turn on its natural defense against disease. This spring, take your yields to the finish line. Ask your seed dealer for a Heads Up seed treatment.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Today we're talking about planters, as on many farms across the country, the planters are rolling out there or soon to be rolling. You want to make sure they're doing a great job. You only get one chance to plant a crop right and get it in at the ideal time and shoot for your maximum yield potential. If you don't do something right, or if there's something that's off on your planter, man, it can take away yield. So I want to focus on that today. If you've got any questions or feedback, it's 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can always email us radio@agphd.com. Got our friend Tony Wendler on right now with Farm Shop MFG, and I didn't think you'd be able to talk to us today, Tony. I thought you were kind of tied up with family stuff.
Yeah, I just kind of got a quick trip away from there. But it turns out my lady love is a year older, and I guess that's a good thing. I want her to keep doing that for a long time.
Yes, absolutely. That is certainly a good thing. But you know what? Sometimes those things happen right in the middle of planting season, and we've had so many questions come in about planters, specifically corn planters, but the same rules would be true for other planters as well or other crops. We had a lot of questions about gauge wheels and a lot of questions about closing wheels. Talk to us about that. As you're going through the farm, I mean, obviously you got stuff set on your planter right now. How often are you checking? Do you see you got to make a lot of adjustments as the season goes on?
Let me come back to that in just a second, if I could. I want to throw out a comment. I got a text from a person who bought germinator wheels down in Arkansas, and he had planted his soybeans in dry soil and had sent me up a picture of a bean that had sprouted, and he said, this is 60 hours old. He said, normally in the soil conditions I planted in, I would expect a rain to get this done. But the germinator with that shoulder and firming that firm vein it creates, it actually did capillary the moisture into his seed zone and start his seeds. So throw that out, because I love it when people call me up and tell me how they're experiencing that, and it's a unique thing to the germinator wheel.
But yeah.
When I'm going out and looking, I look a lot. I look, are my closing wheel arms centered on the furrow? What kind of a job? Just every time you stop, you just walk around the planter and take a look. Do the furrows look right? Periodically get out and dig. And I've got a shovel strapped right in the back of my planter, so I'll do my way of doing it, dig the hole and move the dirt into the hole as a way to dig down that row and both look for how that furrow is collapsed onto the seed. It's totally gone. And then finding seed with the seed-to-soil contact. So my outlook is make it convenient and easy. And if you start setting up things like that, I really think most farmers should just have a shovel hanging on the back of their planter. So you can get a method that's easy for you to go and do it, and you'll do it frequently then.
Yeah, I've seen a number of guys just take bungee straps, Tony, and put shovels in convenient places like that. I always am carrying my shovel along too, and I get it. If you get it in the cab, sometimes it bounces around and that kind of thing. But if you can strap it down on the piece of machinery, it's handy and it's right where you need it.
Yep, right in the back there where you're going to use it. So you grab it off. When you're done, you put it back. And that's actually, I got a hook and a bungee strap on the other end, so it's exactly what I've got with mine.
You think about just doing the digging, Tony. I know we've talked about that quite a bit to try to analyze. One of the things that I notice a lot of times as I'm digging in furrows is I see residue getting pushed in, and I see guys having issues with hairpinning and those kinds of things. I mean, there's several different systems there on that planter unit. You can't fix everything just by having a better closing wheel on the back end. You got to start at the front of that planter, make sure you're doing a good job getting residue out of the way and cleanly cutting through it. It's changed, though, as guys have done reduced till. We see more cover crops out there. I think those things are great, but they just do have a few extra equipment challenges.
Yes, you know, if you got trash whips, moving the material out of the way. In the case of my planter, I've got no-till openers in the front. Just like you're saying, is it cutting? And I will find occasionally that it's hairpinned a leaf or a stalk down through. It didn't do a good job. If it's a common problem, you got to evaluate and make some other changes. If it's just something you see and, well, glad the seed didn't land on it, not a big deal, but you do not want to have a lot of that in your furrow. And then the next thing is you follow the system back. How are your gauge wheels? What is the accuracy and the depth of your furrow? What is your objective? And, you know, for corn,
2 inches plus, shooting for two, slightly deeper. Or a big thing also, depending on where you're at, is go to moisture. So it's target moisture for the, especially for corn. So whatever that depth might be. And are your openers getting you to that point? So you get your seeds into ground that you can actually germinate that seed and not wait for the next rain cloud to come over. Yeah. Falling back, the last thing is closing that furrow up and getting the ideal seed-to-soil contact, all the air out, and creating the environment to germinate that seed and get an even, rapid emergence.
All right, we've had some variable weather too, Tony. We've had 80-plus degrees here in South Dakota in April, which is, it happens from time to time, but I wouldn't say it's normal. And then we've had temperatures down close towards freezing again. So as things are going up and down, eliminating those air pockets seems to make even more importance than if conditions were just ideal and we're catching an inch of rain every week.
Yes. You know, you want to, again, it's moisten that seed. The one thing we don't want to do is get seed out there and we get a cold rain on it. We put it out there and in the next 12 hours or so get a cold rain in conditions that more shred the shell on the kernel rather than germinate it. If you've got soil conditions that are good, let's get that thing germinated and get it past that risk of having the shredding, getting the thing swollen, so it, I should say, the shell softened, so it can swell rather than shred. And with the cold conditions, that's something we got to be concerned about. I'm probably in the same climate as you. We're looking at some temps down here around 30 degrees for the next couple days at night. And soil temperature is going to be fluctuating. Going along with that.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of us have gotten some rain too, so we aren't even really concerned about am I planting right now. It's how long until I can plant again, but it's going to change. This time of year, it warms up pretty quickly when the sun comes out, and our soil temps on Friday were in the 60s to start the day, which is really unusual for us in April, which was kind of a nice thing too, to get stuff in the ground and get it started. Now, we're talking with Tony Wendler here with Farm Shop MFG, and Tony, even in this busy season, are you still easy to get a hold of? People have questions, people want to find you?
Yes. Give them a call. I'll talk to anybody and everybody. And if I can't talk to you in this 5 minutes, I'll call you back 5 or 10 minutes from now.
Yeah, you can find yep. Tony going to farmshopmfg.com, and that's why we talk to Tony when we do. It's easy to get a hold of Tony. And the other thing we always talk about is grain and what's going on in the bins too. And I just remind folks, keep an eye on those grain bins. I saw a picture, Tony, just this morning of a load of soybeans, and man, there were chunks of moldy beans in there. And I thought, oh no, I realize beans aren't worth $20 today, and nobody's super excited about what the bean price is, but man, you just can't afford to lose anything especially when the prices aren't great.
I'm having a few conversations with people right now with these temps and stuff like that. People don't have their bins maybe warmed up. Wasn't too long ago talking to a guy that had monitors and he hadn't reacted. He had the humidity in the top of his bin go up to 90%, and he called me up and he says, well, what do you think there? And I said, I think you need to go up and look at it. He had a crust, and so it wasn't letting the humidity get out, but didn't have the alarm set, didn't react to it quick enough, but he was able to save it by just looking at it and then calling and asking. And
just lost you there, Tony, for a second. You're right. You got to get up there, pay attention to what's going on, and ask questions if you need, because, man, things can go out of condition in a hurry once we start warming up here. Hey, Tony, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Officer Jones calling for backup.
10-4, location?
Graber back 40. Looks like we've got Palmer amaranth, kochia, some common water hemp.
Resistant weeds. Copy that. You'll need a good tank mix partner. I'm sending Tough 5UC.
Come out with your hands up!
Guys, we're surrounded.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belgium Crop Protection.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hardworking Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition and field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hardworking control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, talking about planters today, specifically looking at gauge wheels and closing wheels. And if you've got questions or comments or some tips or tricks you got from your own farm, we'd love to hear from you today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Dave Brennan with us right now with Case IH to discuss this topic. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, not too bad at all. Good to talk to you, Darren.
Well, hey, as we get started, I know you get to talk to folks from all over. What are you seeing with planting right now? What kind of condition are guys going into, and has much been done?
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I deal with our product specialists that represent the Case IH brand and support the dealers really all over North America. And we typically get an early blast from the southern markets. And then it works its way north. And I would say this year has been calls from Louisiana, Arkansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, all at the same time. So it's a little bit different from what we typically see as planting progress has come along here pretty quick in the last week or so. And you look at 80 degree temperatures in most of the Midwest last weekend at a number of planters started and had a lot of calls over the weekend with guys starting up for the first time Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, I think if we didn't have the calendar and you felt that weather, you'd say, oh my goodness, I'm probably late. I should have been planting a lot sooner than this. But then you look at the calendar, you're like, man, crop insurance barely allows me to get started right now in the upper Midwest. So yeah, it looks can be a little deceiving. A lot of stuff to get ready, and it probably did catch some guys off guard. Are there still some last minute planter preparations that guys need to be doing?
Well, I think there's always those things you realize at the last second, maybe as you're filling seed for the first time, and you look at it and go, oh, I forgot to do that. And, among that list of to-do items is something we're talking about today, and that's really gauge wheel settings, gauge wheel clearances to the disc openers themselves. And so that's something that we focus on heavily at our dealer and operator clinics. is making sure that that gap or lack of, maybe I should say, between the gauge wheel and the disc opener is set properly. So, you know, our operator's manual would read, you know, remove any gap. So it should be, you know, no gap in there. And that's important. We create that sealing surface, if you will, between those two, so that if I am in, as it's sitting here raining in central Iowa where I'm at today, but if we're in drier soils, especially fluffier, drier soils, you know, that if there is a gap between those two, we can get soil, dry soil, coming in around the inside of that gauge wheel. And it's going to take the ride. It's going to ride up around that gauge wheel, and it's going to take it to the back of the gauge wheel, and it's going to fall off as it starts to climb that rear curvature of the gauge wheel. Unfortunately, that dry soil, if it does get in there, is going to fall right into the seed trench. And so now I've got dry soil that I parked right on top of my seed. And maybe its neighbor didn't get that dry soil put on it. So am I going to have the best even uniform emergence? No is the answer. So making sure that that sealing surface is appropriately set with those gauge wheels. And you can take that too far. It can maybe be tight enough to act as a brake against that disc opener. And so making sure that that adjustment is set properly on the planter is pretty darn critical, and something that a lot of growers overlook sometimes. And so need to focus on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, as you're driving through the fields, a lot of these planters getting over quite a few acres now. You got to keep an eye on things. They can change. You can hit a rock. Yeah, you can just get wear and tear. There's a lot of conditions out there that aren't going to allow you just to look at it one time preseason and have everything look exactly the same when you pull the planter out of your last field. So I know KSAH does stuff different. You've got a unique agronomic design to gauge wheels and closing wheels. Talk about those design elements and how they work through various planting conditions.
Yeah, so you said that they're agronomic design. You know, we pull that gauge wheel through the field. That's one big differentiator between us and, I'll say, other row units in the market where they're pushing their gauge wheels. So as we encounter those obstacles, whether that's, like you said, rocks, root balls, something drug out by the manure spreader from the cattle lot, whatever it may be, you know, it's gonna require less downforce. It's gonna handle those obstacles better and increase that row unit ride quality because those are trailing style gauge wheels. In addition to that, then, you know, wear on that pivot point. So it's, you know, talk about looking at that gauge wheel to disc opener setting multiple times through the year. Still important, but, you know, with that trailing style gauge wheel arm, it's going to be a little more forgiving in terms of wear on that joint. And then also, obviously, removing service points in that area where we don't have to grease, you know, two times every single row unit on that planter. On really a daily basis. So it different on how we trail that gauge wheel. And the second piece is that reduced inner diameter of the gauge wheel. We often talk about compaction in and around that seed zone and that root development area. And so with that reduced inner diameter gauge wheel, we're able to carry that weight, you know, an inch and a half, 2 inches away from that seed trench area and giving that plant, you know, a really good start without having to exert a lot of effort to create that rib structure.
Yeah, there's just it's interesting, and a lot of times we think, okay, well, that machine wasn't specifically designed for what it is, but man, there's so much work that goes into making the design just right to give the agronomic advantages that we're all looking for. And you see it on early riser planters, and of course you guys are constantly making updates. What are the updates this year on the early riser planters?
Well, so I know today we were talking gauge wheels and closing systems. So that is, you know, some changes as we look at model year 25. Go back to previous models of that 2000 series planter lineup, and that's a notched closing disc. So we know there are conditions in you know, cover crops, tighter clay soils, where we need some what I'll call tiller style action in and around you know, closing that seed trench and maximizing that seed to soil contact. And so we've got a notch closing disc that's available from the factory, as well as available as a retrofit kit back onto those previous planters. So that's a 9-inch inverted disc that's just kind of a sawtooth style. Looks very similar to what folks would call a shark tooth residue manager. So kind of that swept back tooth runs at a compound angle and kind of, I'll say shatters if there is any of that compaction around that area to really maximize, again, that seed to soil contact. So that's one of the changes for model year 2025. We've also made some changes with the gauge wheels as a factory offering there. And so we've gone to a spoked gauge wheel as an option. So there's areas, you know, your area for one of them, the Dakotas is in Minnesota, a big area for notch or spoked gauge wheels. And so we've got that as a factory installed option, both as narrow for better residue flow in no-till conditions and as the wider, what we call our standard gauge wheel for probably more conventional tillage situations. So that spoke gauge wheel does well in letting, if I am planting in the muddy condition, that mud to get out of that area so we're not binding up those gauge wheels and disc openers.
Well, you're right. There's a lot of different options out there, and certainly conditions change and soil types change as you travel around the country. I just encourage farmers, if you got questions about some of the stuff Dave's been talking about, you can always visit caseih.com or talk to your local CaseIH dealer as well. Dave, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. I know you're super busy this time of year, but really appreciate the insight.
You bet. Thank you. See you. Bye.
We're talking gauge wheels and closing wheels on today's Ag PhD radio show. If you have questions, you can always email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. And everybody's got different challenges. I got from Dennis. He said, hey, I was listening to you guys talk about gibberellic acid, and I plan to digest that information. However, I'm imagining it's rather complex. If I'm doing organic farming, is that possible? Will I stay within certified organic guidelines? Hey, that's a great question, Dennis. And I think if you are in a certified organic operation, you definitely want to check out before you use something that isn't approved. But gibberellic acid's been long used in certified organic production. Gibberellic acids produced naturally in plants, in algae, and other organisms. So, yeah, there are certainly ways you can do that in organic, and I would say looking into that might be a good idea for your operation. We'll be right back after this.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit MyBayerPlus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's VRAFY.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health through awareness, guidance, and action. Together, we can uproot the stigma.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Been talking about planters a little bit, about specifically gauge wheels and closing wheels, but if you have any questions, you can always send them in radio@agphd.com, which is exactly what Sam down in Kansas did. He's got a herbicide question, and you're gonna like this one, Brian. This never happens to anybody. I was spraying my corn burn down, and right at the end of spraying time, it drizzled hard for like 3 minutes, about 45 minutes after I got done spraying. So my question is it going to work? I'll give you my recipe. I used Bicep 2 Magnum, which would be atrazine and metolachlor. I used Mezo. I used Dicamba and glyphosate. Now, I looked at what the rain fast charts are. They range anywhere from 1 hour to Bicep says 48 hours rain fast. I'm just kind of curious about that.
Yeah, so if it rains 3 minutes after, is it going to work? It'll work a little bit. Is it going to work perfectly? No. No, it's not. However, you got out of the field 3 minutes before it rained. When did you start spraying? You see where I'm going with this. If it took you, whatever, 45 minutes to spray, let's just say, for example, well, now the other part of the field had 48 minutes of time before the rain hit, and that's going to work significantly better. So we get lots of calls about this every year, and the most common question I get is, should I go right back out there and spray again? The answer is absolutely not, because number one, your herbicide may by some miracle work anyway. You don't have to spend another dollar more. The second thing is, you've already dinged that plant up. So even though it might not die, it's not actively growing right now. And it's not going to be accepting much more for herbicide right now. So you just have to wait and see how it plays out. On the other hand, when we talk about all these products that have residual there, because quite frankly, dicamba's got a little bit of residual. Atrazine has quite a bit. Dual has lots. That's Darren said metolachlor, but Dual's the name brand I'm sure you're familiar with. And then Callisto has a lot of residual as well. So when you get rain on those things, that's great. Now, if it only rained for a few minutes, then that's not going to help you a lot. But, I mean, rain is good on any of the residual herbicides. So I guess I would just say, yeah, it stinks. It's happened to us too. But just wait and see. Chances are it's not going to be terrible.
All right. Thanks for the question, and good luck to you. And yeah, by the way, he had mentioned in his email that he was planning on giving it a week and seeing if he can notice anything. But
yep.
You know what? Perfect. Depending on the weather conditions, sometimes when it's cool, it takes a little longer for some of those things to work. So, All right. I get this one in from IG, who said, hey, you guys have been talking about growth hormones off and on here, like cytokinin, gibberellin, and auxins. I'm wondering which of these hormones are best to use during the corn growing season and potentially even as early as planting time. Well, let's talk about each one of those individually, Brian. Gibberellic acid, that's the one that we probably talk about the most at planting time, but it's very early vegetative, like V1, V2, to try to get higher tonnage.
V2, V4, yeah, on corn, yes. Yep.
So that's probably the one that we talk about the most. Now, there are some guys that will use something like MegaGrow in furrow, which would be more of the auxin side of things. But normally we're waiting for the plant to get a little bit of size to it. We're generally putting auxins in. Specifically the product MegaGrow.
Yeah, but in furrow is fine with MegaGrow because we're talking root growth. With gibberellic acid, it's not the best in the soil, but post-emerge what we can get is more elongation of the stem. You want to spray it. The reason why early is better is because it's cooler early, typically. So you could actually spray it a little bit later if you wanted to. You're going to get more growth. Now, that doesn't lead to more yield in our experience with corn or even with wheat, but with any grass crop, you throw more gibberellic acid out there, it will get taller, meaning you will have more tonnage.
Yep. And then finally, the cytokinins are generally used around reproductive time. So like in corn, just before that tassel emerges, that's when we would use something like Amass would be the product that we'll use if conditions are good. You do see a little better pollen viability there. Those cytokinins get used in a lot of crops that are flowering, and it gets used right during those reproductive stages. So that's kind of when each of those three classes gets used. So just to recap, gibberellic acid, if you're going for more tonnage, use that in the very early vegetative stages when the daytime highs are still pretty cool. The auxins could be used in furrow, could be used post-emerge. They help with root growth mainly, and the cytokinins are mainly for the reproductive stages. Hey, IG, thanks for the question. Appreciate that. And there's certainly a lot of different products out on the market. You can look at specific products for their recommendations of timing as well.
Yeah. Now, you did say cytokinins for reproductive, but I mean, it's IBA and cytokinin that's in MegaGrow, so we're using that all through.
Yeah, there's a lot of combination products too. That's the other thing, IG. It's not just like straight product. And I should probably mention too, there's multiple sources. You can find some of these in, say, algae or seaweed, those kinds of things, but the concentrations really vary, and there could be multiple growth hormones in there at the same time. And so it's a little tricky. Some of the formulated products I like a little better just because I know exactly what the concentration is and exactly what's in the product. But again, like I say, there's lots of different products out there. I would follow the label and see when the best timings are, and at least start there, take some notes and observations on your own farm and see if you're getting the gains that you're hoping for. All right. EDB had a question about winter wheat versus spring wheat. A couple of questions here on wheat about the difference in the grain aspect, like protein levels, and what uses there are for spring wheat, and why does winter wheat not smother off and die when it's covered with snow? But of course, if it's flooded out there, then it dies. Well, let me talk about the uses here first. So normally winter wheat, we think of that with higher protein. A lot of times it gets used in pastas and bread. Spring wheat, typically lower protein, but the carbohydrates are just a little bit different in that. And a lot of the spring wheat gets used in things like pastries and cookies and cakes and pancakes, those kinds of things. So different uses for different kinds of wheat. And obviously there's a lot of different types of wheat out there too. But the air movement, I think, is the big thing, right, Brian? With the snow versus if it was flooded, there just isn't the oxygen in there to keep the plant alive. But if there's a light covering of fluffy snow out there, that's not going to hurt anything.
Well, yeah, but what we care about is what's below ground primarily and keeping that alive. And if it's flooded, well, then there's no oxygen. There's no air, I should say, left in that soil, and you need air for those roots, because even though above ground, a lot of times a lot of foliage may end up, some foliage may end up dying above ground, as long as the root system is still in pretty good shape, you're fine. Well, the root can't do its job. It can't respirate and transpirate. It can't do anything when it's flooded. There's no air there. And on top of that, nutrients can get in with soil microbes. And, I mean, there are many beneficial microbes in the soil. You're killing a lot of those off, too, when you have flooding there. So the thing we worry the most about in many of the perennial crops, like I just think about it on our own farm, alfalfa, ice is a fear. Because then you are kind of capping stuff off. You're not allowing any leaves that may still be alive and any above ground portion to do to basically breathe. So ice is a much bigger fear than snow cover would be. Certainly snow cover usually not that big an issue, and yes, Darren, you would have some air movement there, but like I say, I'm more concerned about the roots than I am what's going on above ground. Part of the reason we want good snow cover too is to insulate the ground. If you insulate the ground, then the frost doesn't get as deep. If we have bad, heavy frost all the way down to 5 feet the ground or something, that's really tough on those perennial plants.
Yes, yeah, and if you trap the heat underneath and that ground doesn't freeze up, you're right, you have a lot better winter survivability. We'll tackle more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag time coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an agro-liquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications, all without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Here at Ag PhD, we're always looking for ways to support the next generation in the ag industry. That's why at our free Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships event on Saturday, June 29th, we're giving away more than 100 college scholarships. Join us as we head into the field for hands-on sessions covering everything from how to pull soil and tissue samples, ways to improve crop health, the importance of microbiology in farming, and much more. Plus, in our comprehensive guide to crop scouting, we'll explore both above and below ground in a variety of crops as we diagnose problems with insects, weeds, diseases, and anything else we may find. As we're giving away tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships to eligible attendees, this day is geared more towards students and young farmers, but anyone with a desire to learn more about agronomy is more than welcome. So whether you're a college student or just want good agronomy information, this is one event you won't want to miss. Come to the Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships Day, Saturday, June 29th on the Hefty Farm near Baltic, South Dakota. Learn more and register at agphd.com.
Save plenty of green on select John Deere compact utility tractors during the Go Green Save Green event at C&B. Payments start as low as $253 per month. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all.
Bale hay all day.
See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease.
And it can also cool my juice box.
Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD if you have an agronomic question, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. And man, when you're 5,800 miles away, email works pretty good. We got an email from Diego down in Argentina, and he said, "Hey guys, been listening to you now for over 5 years. Wow, that's awesome, Diego. Thank you. Really appreciate it. It's been fun to connect with you over those years as well. And again, if you get agronomic questions, we love hearing them. All right, get this one from Guy out in Hawaii. He said, "Guys, I've got some sweet corn. It's 48 days old. It's now 32 to 36 inches tall. Got 10 leaves on it. And the tassel, unfortunately, is already about to emerge on 3 foot tall plants. Now, here's my story. I normally try to plant a little bit of sweet corn each week because I'm supplying a farmer's market. And there's a University of Hawaii hybrid that has a tight husk on it that I normally use because we have earworm problems. And that tight husk keeps the earworm out. I just watch for them and deal with it as they come. But this year, that variety wasn't available, so I bought some biotech seed that had a BT to deal with this, so we'll see how that biotech trait works. Anyway, what I'm asking about right now, we've had some really unusually cold, wet, and cloudy weather. We're right next to a large mountain here, and we're getting highs in the upper 60s, lows in the upper 50s right now, and it's wet and cloudy. So I'm kind of curious. There's a purple tinge on the bottom of the stalk. I'm curious about that. And also, does day length, temperature, heat units, all those things, how big a factor is that in the maturity of this corn?
Well, heat is everything. Heat has to do with your amount of gibberellic acid in the plant, which means elongation of the stem. Your plant is so short because there wasn't a lot of gibberellic acid produced because the temperature was cold. As far as maturity, it takes longer to mature the colder that it is. Whether it's sweet corn, field corn, any kind of corn, it matures based on heat. So the less heat you have, the longer it takes to finish, and that's just part of the deal. Yeah, the temperatures that he's having there, we're pretty familiar with those cold temperatures. We're used to dealing with that kind of stuff. We were just in the last segment talking about gibberellic acid to make plants taller. With sweet corn, honestly, I mean, it doesn't make your sweet corn produce more, doesn't make it yield better, doesn't make the ears taste better, nothing else. It would just make the plant taller. So it's not like it's worth spending money on gibberellic acid when it's cold to make that plant taller. But that, in my opinion, is what is going on.
All right. I get this one in from Steve over in central Minnesota. He said, hey guys, my crop insurance date has come and gone for planting corn, so I should be able to go according to what you guys talk about, but my seed dealer is telling me to wait. Talk me through this. What are the extra things that you guys are doing to be successful with early planted corn?
Yep. So I have spent the day in Minnesota today. There are a lot of people that already have corn and beans in the ground. We would not have recommended planting soybeans already because it's ahead of the crop insurance date. The first planting date in southern Minnesota for crop insurance for soybeans, I believe from everything that I've seen, is April 21st. Well, that's not till Sunday. But on corn, I think it's the 11th of April here in southern Minnesota. Anyway, the point is, what we do and what we advise people to do when they're planting into cold temperatures in April in our region of the country, it's several things. Probably the most important is making sure that you have good vigor with your corn. In other words, you want to have a high cold germination score in addition to the high warm germination score, of course. If it's going to germinate in warm temperatures, though, I don't really care right now. What I do care about is, will it germinate when it's super cold outside? And so that's number one, cold germ. But then beyond that, I want to have a good seed treatment on there. On our farm, what we do is if we get some corn that doesn't have the seed treatment that we want, we have other stuff we can add in the planter box. On top of that, we like having a little bit of in-furrow fertilizer, not a lot, but a little bit of low-salt in-furrow fertilizer. We're using Zyway 3D on our farm, so that's fungicide, and that has been that's really improved yields for us. Even when we're planting a little bit later, that's been good, stopping early season diseases and carrying us way through. So now maybe you can get by with one foliar shot of fungicide if you even need that. So those are really the key things. But on top of that, I would say when that seed sits in the ground longer, it's much more prone to have insect issues. So that's why we're also throwing Capture LFR out there. Even if it is traded corn, there are still all these secondary pests that are out there. You dig around a little bit, and you're most likely going to find things like wireworms, white grubs, sea corn maggot, sea corn beetle, just a lot of bugs out there. And if the seed is sitting in the ground for 5 weeks or 4 weeks instead of 1 week or a week and a half, just that much more time where you have to worry about that insect feeding. So, yeah, it's several things. Again, cold germ, seed treatment, fungicide, insecticide. I'm looking at a little bit of in-furrow low-salt fertilizer as well. So I know it's quite a few things, But when we do that, we're getting more yield. But then also what we're seeing is a lot better germination. And it's interesting. So, Darren, you would have gotten this too. Just yesterday, there was a seed company we saw that said, hey, make sure you have a great seed treatment on your soybeans. And we're seeing a much higher germination percentage. We've seen that in our own testing. We started our own seed lab over 30 years ago, and that was one of the things I noticed right away. Treated seed is that much better. Well, the better the treatment, the better the germination period. So that's why I'm still going to come back to, hey, we want great germination scores, especially cold germ, but that seed treatment, man, that is a big deal. If you have the best, much better than having just some mediocre average seed treatment.
All right, thanks for the question.
One last thing. Go ahead. Because a lot of people get worried about planting corn early. So now I don't know why people think, oh, soybeans are okay. I'm not comfortable with that. But I would say this. So I was just talking to an agronomist this morning, and he goes, yeah, there's somebody I know that's got all 1,100 acres of their corn in southern Minnesota right here. It's all done. And I don't know. I think that's maybe too early. And I said, well, don't forget. What you always want to think about is it's not the first day that you're planting. It's the last day. So, yeah, it's maybe a little bit early for me, but if I have it done now, then I don't have to worry about having 3 weeks of rain, and all of a sudden I'm planting in mid to late May when I know I'm going to have yield loss. I'm not comfortable with that. And because the job is done now, you have time to do all kinds of other things. You have time to go tile or spray or plant your beans in April or, you know, whatever other job you have on the farm. So it's good to get these things out of the way. But, yeah, we're always looking at, what's the first crop insurance date? As long as we're past that, we feel pretty comfortable.
All right, got a soybean question. Got a couple minutes left here. Jake down in Kansas said, hey, guys, I've been doing some variable rate in my soybeans. I've noticed in the highly productive areas, I can get by with a lower population. But I've been a little fascinated, as you guys have talked about, higher populations for the low productivity area, not just normal pops, but higher pops. Talk me through this.
Yeah. Well, it's a bunch of things. So the biggest reason why is look at the height of your beans in those bad areas. They're always shorter. And if you put more plants out there, number one, they should get taller, so you should have better weed control. You'll retain more moisture in the soil because there won't be as much sun hitting the soil. And then you're also capturing more sunlight, period. So you've got a better chance for higher yield. That's kind of the point. Now, there are a bunch of other reasons we could go through, but the one that I wanted to highlight where we talked to a lot of people about is, so I just said I've been in Minnesota all day. There's a lot of iron deficiency chlorosis in Minnesota. It's high pH spots, basically. Well, if you increase your soybean population from, let's say, 140,000 is standard, but you increase it to 160 or 170,000, I can almost guarantee you, you will see greener beans, less iron deficiency chlorosis, and higher yield by, in some cases, 5 to 10 bushels. Because what all plants do with their roots, they don't just bring in water and nutrients. They also kick out acid into the soil, organic acids. Some people call them chelating agents. But when you have more acid in the soil, that lowers that pH, at least temporarily, which dramatically reduces the amount of iron deficiency chlorosis you have. So yes, high population in the bad spots, low population in the good spots. You do that in soybeans, vary your rate, and a lot of times you're going to come out money ahead.
Well, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Yeah, there's a lot to think about here as planting is getting started. Please send us your questions, radio@agphd.com. Thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.